AI agents are everywhere, automating tasks and making decisions at machine speed. But agents make mistakes. Just one rogue agent can do big damage before you even notice. Rubrik Agent Cloud is the only platform that helps you monitor agents, set guardrails, and rewind mistakes, so you can unleash agents, not risk. Accelerate your AI transformation at rubrik.com. That's rubrik.com.
When you think boots, you think Ariat. You think comfort from day one and durability to day 1,000. You think steel toes on the job, square toes on the dance floor, with style that owns a Saturday night and still looks sharp enough for Sunday dinner. And through every mile and every moment, you're thinking Ariat boots. Boots that show up, stand out, turn bad ideas into better stories, and still punch the clock come Monday morning. Now, it's time to stop thinking and start shopping. Find your Ariat boots at Ariat.com or a retailer near you.
Boom, shake the room. Boom, shake the room. Tick. Boom. Yes, it is Meltdown Monday, peeps. Welcome back to my favorite podcast, your favorite podcast, everybody's favorite YouTube social media series and podcast. Welcome, peeps, to another incredible episode of the Meltdown. As always, my name's Tom Finkiel. I'm repping it over here in good old England. Yes, Manchester has never looked so fine. However, in just a little change from the norm, it is very dark outside right now in Manchester. Do you know why that is, Brian? Do you know why it's dark right now? Because I found the key to time travel. So many of you are going to be watching YouTube right now on our Meltdown Monday. However, for me right here in Manchester, it's Wednesday. However, for our big brother over that pond, it's still only Tuesday. We've wrapped 3 days all up into one. I found the DeLorean. We've hit 88 miles per hour, and we're going to see some serious shit. Yes, it is going to be the start to your Meltdown Monday, and we have got one special, ultra special guest for you on this beautiful day. He has been blamed for, check this out, he has been blamed for the death of WCW. He has been blamed for the bad weather in Manchester. He has even been blamed for the sinking of the Titanic, yet he professes with his hand on his heart that it's not his fault. I'm going to bat over to my big brother, Brian. Let's introduce our guest.
Let's do it, Tom. We got a big week ahead. As you know, a little bit of traveling, going to the East Coast, little New York, New Jersey action.
Oh, yeah.
Also, we've got just a little thing called Money in the Bank, PLEWWE, which will be kicking off Saturday night, Inglewood, California. A big, big show. But tonight, right now, this is what is happening. It's 1 a.m. for the Tomcat. Mm-hmm. It's just a little bit of the afternoon for me here in Tucson, Arizona. But we are feeling fine as we blast our way into episode 9. Remember, and don't get it twisted, we cover the 90s, 2000s, and current on roster superstars, MMA legends, Hollywood celebrities, and more. Others talk about it. We are about it. Today's guest is a former WWE superstar during the Ruthless Aggression era. He is a former World Extreme Ultimate Heavyweight Champion, a WXW Heavyweight Champion, a WXW Tag Team Champion, a 2013 WXW Hall of Famer. He's also an actor, and he was inducted into the Pennsylvania Sports Hall of Fame in 2018. Ladies and gentlemen, the Meltdown proudly welcomes Gene Snitsky.
Well, thanks, guys. I'm honored to be on the show. I ran into Brian out in Vegas, and he was like, man, I got to get you on the podcast. And ironically, that was the first time I met Brian in person, but we had spoke online several times. Craigslist, you know. Oh, I mean Facebook. My bad. So
personal messages over OnlyFans, then we're all good.
Well, just from the waist up. But yeah, he said about being on the show. I was like, heck yeah, man, I'd be honored. He's always been a favorite of mine. I did a lot of my you know, character geared towards his style and what they were doing back in the day. I always appreciated his physique, his style, and I actually used his finish as my finish. So, you know, pay homage to my boy Brian. So it's just quite an honor to be here with you and Tom. And thanks for that amazing introduction. I am flattered, and you know, I'm ready to rock and roll. Let's do it, guys.
Let's do it, man. Gene, we want to. I'm going to do a little bit of a timeline on you here. It's just because I don't think we could actually bypass us not talking about, of course, your high school career as far as sports, and then into college. So, if you can't tell us a little bit about your high school football days, and then you transition and getting that full scholarship to Mizzou.
Well, I went to Panther Valley High School in Pennsylvania here. It's a town, you know, made up of four towns. It's a real small area. We're kind of small town USA here, coal region. So four towns made up my high school. My graduating class was like 137, something like that. So wow. not very big numbers when you look at, like, you know, compared to Philadelphia or Harrisburg or Allentown. But anyways, I'm, you know, proud to come from this area, hardworking coal miners, and went to Panther Valley, like I said, graduated in 1988. Okay. I don't know where all that time went. It's crazy. Like, blink of an eye, man. But anyways, played football, basketball, baseball, track.
And all-state. You were all-state player?
Yes, sir. I was actually first team all-state when Pennsylvania still had the whole state. Now they do a small school, big school. So I actually made it when it was the whole state. So I was only the third player in the history of my school to do it. And I actually played on the first championship team in the history of my school. We won the District 11 Class A championship in 1987 and got recruited pretty heavily for football, basketball, and didn't really see a future for a 6'6 white guy in basketball because I always wanted to be a professional athlete. So I opted to gear all my efforts towards football and focus on football my senior year, and ended up taking visits to Mizzou, Penn State, Temple. I canceled Syracuse and I canceled Clemson after I went to Mizzou because I knew I was going there. My basketball coach was not happy about me missing basketball games every week for recruiting trips. So after I went to Mizzou, I kind of, you know, made my mind up on I was going to go there. So went to Mizzou on a full football scholarship, did my thing there. Actually was honored to play for Coach Reed. Andy Reed was my offensive line coach at Mizzou. So that was kind of cool. And then I'm a diehard Eagles fan. So I was like, oh, this is going to be good. Because he, you know, ended up getting the job at Philly. And then I was down, went down to camp every year to see him and went down to a game or two every year. And, you know, it was awesome having him here. And then he left and went to Kansas City. So now I'm a Kansas City Chiefs fan. They're my AFC team. So I'm still diehard Eagles, but AFC is my Chiefs. So ended up going to the NFL combines, did the thing in Indianapolis with all the NFL teams. Got picked up as a free agent with the Chargers because I had a pre-existing shoulder injury that got misdiagnosed at Missouri. They had told me I had a sublect shoulder, but here it was a torn labrum, and my arm would just constantly pop out of socket. Yeah. So I'm like, there's got to be something going on here. So went through the whole, you know, physical exam at the combines, and they were like, hey, we think you have a torn labrum. I'm like, what? So anyways, make a long story short, ended up signing with the Chargers as a free agent anyway, and then went to camp with those guys. A few months in, I got, you know, just kept re-aggravating my shoulder and had to step away from that. Mm-hmm. Got surgery done from the team physician for the Steelers at the time, who was buddies with my agent. Went to Pittsburgh, had the shoulder surgery, came home, rehab for a year. Then I played in the CFL, came back and played in the CFL for the Birmingham Barracudas in 95. CFL, no offense to my Canadian friends, but it just wasn't my cup of tea. So I retired from football in 95, got into wrestling in 96, hooked up with the Samoans, the Wild Samoan training camp here in Allentown. Did my first official wrestling tour with Samu and Lloyd.
So well, I want to ask you one thing before we bypass. I don't say bypass, but I just think Andy Reid, I mean, a Super Bowl winning coach, coached you in college. That's amazing. I just want to put that over before we, it's just so impressive to me. Gene.
It's an honor to have played for him because he was awesome. He was a great coach, and I'm not saying that because of all the stuff he did, but like as a player, he's a player's coach. I mean, he played football at another Missouri school.
Yep. That's what I wanted to know. I want to know about his coaching style because I know our listeners out there. We have a lot of NFL fans throughout social media, of course. And you know, when it gets that time of the year, they're going to pull this up and they're going to wait a minute. What was that tie-in with Snitsky and Andy Reid? So I didn't want to gloss over it too much. So how was his coaching style? Was he a very relatable type coach?
He was one of those guys that he liked to have fun. But when it was time for business, it was time for business. But we had a lot of fun. He would always tease me. He'd be like, "Man, you're either gonna end up in the NFL or in jail." I was kind of one of those guys. I would do anything for a reaction, do anything for a laugh. You know, somebody dared me to do something, it was getting done. And he enjoyed messing around as much as we did, I think, because we used to prank him and put like stuff on his. For the screen to watch film, we'd like put goofy pictures up in there. So when he'd pull it down, he'd, you know, see this, like, you know, whatever we decided to goof around with. But he would always like just kind of play it off and like, you know, he knew his stuff, man. He knew everything inside and out. And you'd watch, like, you could relate to this, Brian. We would watch the same play probably 100 times. And he would go over every individual position 50 times probably for each guy. What did you do wrong? Where's your foot? What was wrong with your footwork? What about your hand placement? Where was your head? What about your hips? Like he was so detail oriented about everything. I'm not surprised he's the winningest coach in the history of the Eagles and the Chiefs. That guy, man, he broke down. You want to talk about breaking down film? He broke down film.
Yeah. And that's the difference. The people, the coaches that put in that work in those hours, because you know how crazy the hours anyway for an assistant, a position coach, any of those are putting in tons of hours, and all that detail work pays off. So he was very
detail oriented. I gotta say that about the man. He knows his X's and O's inside and out. And like I said, man, like, you know, you're a former college player. It's all about body position as offensive lineman, head position, hand position, hips, swivel, you know, getting your hips, you know, it's crazy how many things go into one football play that the general public has no idea.
Yeah. Well, I didn't want to touch, I didn't interrupt your, as you were rolling along into your pro career, but I just thought that Andy Reid, like, wow, we got someone here who actually was coached by a legend, legend.
Yes. Ironically, after he left to go to Green Bay, Marty Morningwig took over, and he was my offensive line coach for my senior year, who also was the head coach of Detroit.
Yep.
And then ended up coming to Philly as the offensive coordinator for Andy. And I still keep in touch with all those guys, so it's kind of funny, like, how I came from a small coal mining town in Pennsylvania, ended up going to Mizzou, played for, you know, arguably the best coach in the NFL history. And, you know, just happenstance. Now he's like, you know, Super Bowl champion 3 times over. It's crazy. Like, I think to myself, what are the odds of that happening? A guy from Nesquehoning ending up, you know, playing for a guy like Andy Reid. It's just crazy to me how, like, life just, you know, things happen in life that you never think of until it happens. And you're like, man, that's crazy. Like, what are the odds of that happening? It's crazy.
Well, it's impressive. I want to touch on that. I'm going to kick it over to Tom now, because Tom is going to get right back into gear where we were talking about getting into the business.
Yes.
Let him have it, Tom.
So you mentioned just a couple of names there, being the Wild Samoans, Samu. I want to get the skinny on the Wild Samoans. Give us a good Wild Samoan story from training camp.
Oh. Well, the funny thing is, like, when we started training, I affectionately refer to him as Pops, because that's what the students called Afa Anawai Sr. We called him Pops. And before he'd even get in the ring, we'd have to do 1,000 bodyweight squats. So you'd see a lot of guys on Monday that you wouldn't see on Tuesday, that you wouldn't see on Wednesday. Pops would always be like, son, there's going to be more rainy days than sunny days. So enjoy all the sunny days that you can. Like, I could still remember him saying that to all the boys. And we had to, like, do the bodyweight squats, break down the ring, put the ring back up. This is before we even got in the ring to even try to take a bump or anything. There was a progression to it. And like I said, the same guys that you saw on Monday weren't the same guys you saw on Thursday or Friday. It's funny how that weeded out a lot of guys. But he was always big on respect, man. Respect the business, respect the boys, respect, you know, go in the locker room, say hello to everybody. Just be a sponge. Keep your mouth shut, eyes and ears open, and take it all in and learn. You know, don't be, you know, disrespectful to the business. That the Samoans are huge on respect, and the culture is all about respect, and they carried it over to pro wrestling, because that's one of the first things I can remember Pops telling us. You know, respect the business. You know, go in and say, you know, introduce yourself to everybody, say hello, and just kind of be a sponge. So I kind of just followed his lead. He took me under his wing, and I wouldn't be where I am today without him. So
it's amazing.
Love you, Pops.
As we do here on the Meltdown, we're sending all our love out to the late greats, Afa and Hawaii. Yes, beautiful. The Wild Samoans, incredible. And it was an absolutely incredible start to what would be an incredible career in professional wrestling. So you transferred from the training camp of the Wild Samoans through to a number of different independents, found a home in WXW. Brian's just been through all your wonderful accomplishments there, and then wound up in Ohio Valley Wrestling with one of our all-time faves, the legend, our hero, Dairy Queen's very own wanted man, Mr. Jim Cornette. Now, tell us about Jim Cornette. We always like to hear a Cornette story here on the Meltdown. We're all about sharing the truth. So let's see if we can get one from Gene Snitsky.
Well, since I've never told a lie in my entire life, all you're going to get is the truth from me. Just saying. But anyways, the best story I have that I remember from Jimmy was, we were at a spot show one time, and Linda Miles had done something. And Jimmy started yelling and screaming like only Jimmy can. And before you know it, everyone just kind of dissipated off to the other side of the room. And he was just ranting and raving at Linda. And, I mean, Jimmy's famous for his tirades and his, you know, could be a better word. Anyways, I can't think of a better word than a tirade at the moment.
I think he's perfect. I think tirade.
That's good. That's good. Rant.
Oh my God, man. He knew how to clear out a room real quick, because you just kind of were like, okay. And I, you know, just kind of turn your head and just walk the other way. You don't want to be in the middle of one of Jimmy's tirades when he was, you know, when he was on fire.
But he can go for like 5 minutes for a full tirade, as you've just said, and make it sound like poetry and have a point at the beginning, middle, and end. And that's historic for me.
He's definitely one of a kind. I love the guy. He's been so helpful to me over the years. And it's funny, because when we were doing OVW television, it was on a Wednesday. So obviously Monday Night Raw's on Monday. So the week that I came out and I did my thing with Kane and Lita, they instantly started chanting Baby Killer. So I get back to OVW, and I can vividly remember Jimmy coming up to me, and he goes, hey, Snitsky, you're never going to be on another one of my shows. I can't have a Baby Killer on my show. I can't have people chant Baby Killer on OVW television. I'm like, it's not my fault.
Perfect. That is great. That's a great lead-in right there, because what I was going to ask you next was about your WWE intro. Taboo Tuesday, your first match against Kane, San Juan, Puerto Rico. I just watched this past week, and I was impressed, man. I'm going to tell you, not only from your work, which I will cover here in just a second, but the crowd was red hot. I mean, this is when the signs were from the top to the bottom, when everybody had a sign. They did a great vignettes leading up to the match. And I just thought it was red hot. And of course, with Lawler and Jim Ross putting the match over,
Great commentary, right?
Those guys, man, I used to watch, like, I hate watching myself back, right? But I would watch my matches back just to hear the commentary between him and the King. Because, like, the one liners that they would have about me were just freaking priceless. It just, even to this day, if I watch them, I literally break out in laughter because they're that funny. The stuff that they just come off with off the cuff, it's great.
Great chemistry between those two. And yeah. Speaking of chemistry, with you and Kane, man, if that was your first meeting with you two, because I don't know, I'm guessing it was, but you guys went back and forth, and he sold so much for you, and you looked like the perfect opponent for him during that match. And the storyline was great. How much time did you guys, had you ever hooked up prior to this?
No, it was crazy. Cause like my very first time on Raw, I didn't even get announced. I was just kind of that guy in the ring that was going to get squashed. And then, the whole thing with he was going to crush my throat and he put the chair under my head and Alita came in and I could remember it clear as day. Glenn telling me when we were walking through it earlier in the day, he's like, whatever you do, hit me as hard as you can with the chair because I don't want it to look, I don't want it to look bad. And I said to him, listen, it's going to be great. You don't have nothing to worry about. Because back with the Samoans, man, we laid everything in. You know how those guys are. If you're not laying your shit in, they're going to get back on top and start laying their shit in. So, that's just how I was trained. I told him, I said, no problem, buddy. It'll be great. So I hit him and then he felt like the way he sold that chair shot to this day is, I'm not saying it because it's our match, but if you watch his body language and just the way he falls on Lita, it's amazing. Like you couldn't draw it up any better. Like that came out so good. Like that could have been the shits. But Glenn was like such a great professional. Like just watching it back to this day, it's like crazy to me how amazing of a job he did to make that look so real. Like I was instantly hated. I was the top heel in the business just on that, just from that. It was crazy. Like I had more heat than anybody in wrestling at the time, just from that. I didn't even do anything yet.
Well, he did a great job, but you were definitely the other slice of that pie. I'm going to tell you, because you really carried yourself really well, man. I was impressed with it. You laid everything in, and then I think that it's over, and I'm like, okay, well, hell of a match is that, and then what does Gene have to do? He's got to push him off the gurney. I was like, yes.
Excellent. Oh, that was great. Yeah, it was, oh, man. I got yelled at by Vince, though, because I hit one of the EMT guys. I was so pumped up with adrenaline when I came out there and flipped him. I was like, ah! And I, like, literally did it into a guy and knocked him over. And I wasn't trying to. It was my first big pay-per-view ever. It was on my mom's birthday, and I had just beaten Kane. Yeah. So how much adrenaline do you think was pumping through my veins? You know what I'm saying? These veins right here, Brian.
You know? There you go. Always in shape, brother. You look great.
Thanks. So it was like, it just happened, It was just the perfect thing at the perfect time. And I was, I couldn't have asked for a better break into the business than that storyline with Glenn, man. He was so easy to work with, so awesome to work with. And like you said earlier, just sold all my stuff so good. Yeah. It made me look like the giant psychopathic killer that they were portraying me as. So it was great.
Yeah. It was like all planets had aligned, honestly, for us. You've got two absolute beasts.
Because I literally had never done a dark match. I was never at a show. Like, they literally just called me on a Friday. Howard Finkel called me and said, hey, Gene, we're going to fly up to Seattle on Sunday. So you got to get all your stuff together and we'll have your travel for you. I was like, all right, awesome. Thanks, Mr. Finkel. Like, I had no idea what I was doing. Nobody told me. They flew me to Seattle and I found out what I was doing. And next thing you know, it's like the hottest angle in wrestling. And I had never done a dark match. I had never been to a house show. I never did anything. Nothing. They just threw me in there.
That is some faith in you, good sir. That is
crazy. It's crazy. That is
massive props. And
I was pretty pumped about
Uncle Howard there. Yeah, we always love Uncle Howard on.
Yeah, well, as a former football player, I mean, like, you know, Brian will tell you, when you're out there in front of 60,000 people with 21 other guys, like, the adrenaline's crazy, and you're, you know, you're super confident in yourself. You're not going to go out there and, you know, be a pushover or think you can't do it or anything. Like, I've always been a pretty confident guy, and I've always had faith in myself, and I knew I could do it. I just needed to get in there to do it. So once I got there, I was like, man, I'm going to hit a home run with this sucker. They gave me the ball, and I wasn't fumbling, man. I was taking it to the house for a touchdown.
And it's live TV, right? So it's got to go, right? Sink or swim, and this is it. This is all on the line right now.
You only get one chance for a first impression, buddy.
Well, you made it, mate. You made it. Honestly, and this is not blowing smoke. At the time that this happened, I was DJing in bars around Manchester. This particular bar that I was in showed Monday Night Raw on a Friday night because we didn't get it live. So ours was taped. And in the UK, we saw it on a Friday. So I went out to work and it came on the bar about 10 p.m. at night. And I was spinning some tunes and playing some tunes. And your spot came up with Kane. And it's a spot that we're going to talk about next. It's the infamous baby punt. And the entire bar gasped in unison. There it is, right there. It's so over that he's wearing it on his chest. and it really, well, honestly, the whole bar gasped. And it was one of those where I'm turning my head and I'm seeing replays. And people are coming up to me going, that wasn't a real baby, right? I was like, let's just get this straight right now. Nobody's going to be showing a tape-delayed TV show where they actually murder a child on air. So just bring yourselves down and have another drink. But let's talk a little bit about this. And the name that you dropped before, obviously, he was the head honcho of WWE from the start up until very, very recently. I want to know what kind of advice Vince gave you just before you walked through that curtain before the baby punt.
Well, here's a funny Vince McMahon story. We're out at the ring. They finally tell me, you know, what I'm going to be, you know, putting this baby and all that. And we're walking through it. And Vince looks at me and he goes, whatever you do, don't fuck it up. Don't miss the baby. I was like, listen, Mr. McMahon, I was an all-area punter in high school. This is going to be freaking amazing. I'm telling you. Like I said, I wasn't one that lacked confidence. So I knew I was going to crush it. Mm-hmm. And my mindset was I was trying to kick it as high as I could to hit the overhead Tron thing.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
That was what I was like envisioning. I'm like, I'm gonna bounce it off of that thing, and people are just gonna be like, holy shit. But it even ended up coming out better because it flew into the crowd, and then the guy actually threw it back at me. You don't see that on camera, but when it, like, if you look at it and watch it back, you'll see me go, I kind of like just do a little dip. Because the freaking guy threw it back at me. He was so mad, he took the damn baby doll and threw it back at me. But I had to stay in character, so I kind of played it off. But man, it was freaking great. That was so much fun. Like, I love that shit. I do that stuff at the house.
Welcome to a regular Wednesday.
Just another day.
I'm going to put a ticker on the bottom of this show. If you want your baby kicking, call this number. Oh, what an incredible story, Brian.
Yeah. Let me ask you this, Gene. I, you know, as I was going through your history and watching all of your stuff, I was wondering, this is what I wanted to ask you. I was like, okay, you had such a great look versus Kane, and then they sort of changed you up, and I didn't really understand it. Maybe you can fill in the blanks for me. Was it because of ECW that they gave you that new look, or were they trying to go for something different? Because it felt, did you feel like they should have changed it, or were you happy with the change?
I often wonder to myself, Brian, what the heck, why they did that. But I was just walking by the ring one day, because we used to go out back in the day, you go out and work out in the ring and do, you know, whatever. Yeah. So I was just walking out to the ring, and Vince pulls me aside and he goes, hey, I got this idea. I want you to shave all your hair off and go see the makeup lady and see if they can make your teeth look bad. And I'm like, I swear to God, I thought to myself, is he fucking with me? Oh, sorry. Are we allowed to curse?
Yeah, go ahead.
I'm literally thinking, is he fucking with me right now? Like, is he ribbing me? Is this a joke? And I'm like, you know, I'm going to look just like Glenn, right? And he's like, I don't care. I'm moving you to ECW. I'm like, What do you say? You can't say no to Vince. It's like an opportunity for me. I was like, okay. So shaved all my hair off, got this makeup stuff from New York City that I had to order. And they, it was like, it came in like a lady's nail polish bottle type thing. Mm-hmm. And I had to get my teeth like totally dry and painted on. What a pain in the ass. That was the worst part, having to do that every night for house shows and then for TV. But I always joke around with people. I'm like, well, it got me another action figure. So, hey, what the heck?
There you go. See, it all pays off. And sometimes years later, but, you know, there's a tie in there. So I was curious.
Just for the record, though, I hated that character. I didn't like it at all.
Okay.
I mean, I thought it was cool that they were pushing me as the monster on ECW.
Yeah.
But then I don't know whose bright idea it was, but Stephanie came up to me backstage and she's like, my dad just thinks you're doing such a great job on ECW. We're going to draft you back to Raw next draft. I'm like, are you kidding me? Like, that's what I'm thinking to myself. Like, I'm finally getting some footing. I'm finally getting over with this monster, crazy psycho killer guy. And then they're just going to sweep the rug out from under my feet and take me right back to Raw. It just didn't make any sense to me, but, you know.
And that's the way, yeah, I understand. That's the way it happens at times. It really is up there.
Yeah, just as a side note, I mean, obviously you were smashing it on ECW, but the end was nigh for that particular brand. Do you think that they had more legs in it? Do you think that it could have been more than it was? Or do you think it was just something that Vince wanted to play with for a little bit and then throw away?
Well, I think it was Vince's baby. So that's kind of why he came to me with the whole shaving the hair thing and all that. Because if it's Vince's idea, he'll usually give it, you know, 1,000% and, you know, run it till it, you know, its legs fall off. But I just thought it was the perfect fit for me because the way they were booking me on ECW was how I felt I should have been booked to begin with. Because I was coming out, like I came out, I freaking crushed Lashley, crushed CM Punk, crushed Balls Mahoney, broke Hardcore Holly's arm in a match to take him out. Like, when you see me coming down the street, you tend to probably either go to the other side of the street or walk back to where you came from. I don't like look like a normal average guy. Like, I'm a scary motherfucker, and that's how they were booking me there. So that was good. That's how I think I should have been booked the whole time. And then, like I said, to get the rug swept out from under my feet after getting all that momentum, they flew me up to the headquarters to do promos for it and everything. Mm-hmm. And then they just draft me right back to Raw. It just didn't make any sense. I don't know. It's weird.
Yeah,
it is. It's a strange dichotomy as to exactly what goes on in the mind of Vincent Kennedy McMahon.
It's a crazy business, brother.
Brother. And sometimes that doesn't work for me. However,
I was going to say, Gene, you could have told him that. Hey, right?
Yeah.
Did you ever get any sort of, you've got to have like weird looks in airports, right? I mean, obviously you've shaved all the hair off. You had no eyebrows. And you have got your personal life. You have got your professional life. And there has got to be a difference in between the two. But to go to those type of extents, that's insane.
Well, right? Like I said earlier, I'm kind of one of those guys where I'll do anything for a reaction. I'll do anything for a laugh. It doesn't bother me one bit. Like, I didn't care. I didn't have hair. I wasn't trying to win any beauty pageants or anything like that, so I didn't really give a shit. I was getting paid. I was having the time of my life. I was beating people up, you know, getting paid to beat people up and work out. I mean, that's like a dream come true for anybody that's in wrestling, you know?
Absolutely.
So, I mean, I didn't particularly like the character, like I said, but I enjoyed portraying, like, I'm an actor at heart, so I love portraying a character to begin with. So my mindset was, well, hell, I'm going to turn this pile of shit into a pile of gold. That's just how I would always, you know, approach things. So, I mean, who would have thought we'd be talking about punting a baby 20 years later, right?
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. And from characters, you were obviously such a massive character of the Ruthless Aggression era. But I really want to talk about another one that was a huge character at the same time, and one that has just been featured on Dark Side of the Ring that you were one of the wonderful talking heads for, and that is Muhammad Hassan. How was it for Mark, do you feel, to be thrust into that character? Obviously, you had your head shaved and your eyebrows shaved, but he was for all intents and purposes, he was portraying a character that was ultimately bringing terrorists to our screen. Craziness.
Well, like Jimmy said in the start of the show, he's an Italian from Syracuse. So, I mean, to portray the character the way he did is kudos to him, man. And he's such a good guy. Like, he worked with me a lot at OVW, helping me perfect my craft. And, you know, it's just kind of, like we just said, man, it's just a crazy business. He busts his ass all those years to get there. And then he ends up with that character to only have it turn into a terrorist thing. And, like I said to my wife when we were watching the show, I'm like, what are the freaking odds that they'd have a terrorist attack the same time that they're doing their angle with Undertaker? Like, what are the odds of that? That's crazy. Like, you could never in a million years think to yourself that that would have happened, ever. It was just crazy. And Mark's like he's just such a great guy and such a professional. It's a bummer because of the timing. Because he could have been the next Rock or the next Hogan, you know? It's crazy.
He definitely had the skills. He portrayed that character so well. Yeah. Do you think he was pushing the envelope too far when it came to the terrorist?
Well, I mean, it's not him per se. You know, it's the writers. They're kind of, like I said, man, it's just one of those things where the timing of it just sucked. Because let's be realistic. After 9/11, everybody kind of hated the Arabs. And anybody from Middle East, they always kind of got that second look, like, you know, the under your breath talking to the person next to you, you know, all that kind of stuff. That's just how it was. And for him to be able to do that character as an Italian guy and put up with all the nonsense and all the discrimination and all the looks and the whispering, I mean, that says a lot for him, man, because he had to live it. You know, he lived that character. And, you know, to be put in that position as a 24-year-old guy, it's kind of, you know, it's your dream job. You're trying to do the best you can. You're trying to impress everybody. You want to be, you know, you want to be the guy. And then that happens. It's just kind of, you know, it just sucks for him. But, I mean, you know, once again, here we are talking about it 20 years later. So it resonated with a lot of people, you know.
Well, portraying a character maybe that you never really dreamed you would get at times, you know, you just got to be able to spin it. Yep. Gene, I'm going to ask you this, man. We both have had some experience in acting, and you and I both have actually done horror films in a lead role. In 2017, I did Axeman 2.
Yeah, buddy.
And I was going through your history, and here recently, I noticed that you did a film called 100 Acres of Hell, okay? And here's what I want to do. I want to read the overview, okay? And then I'm going to ask you about it. But I this was in the overview here, and it says, after suffering a career-ending injury and family tragedy, wrestling champ Buck Severs travels to an abandoned wildlife preserve where his friends for a bro weekend. So friends are hanging out for the weekend. So they become targets of a deadly manhunt. And Buck, which is the character here, he must find the warrior in himself to fight. Now get this, a psycho inbred mutant killer that stalks the preserve. I got to know about this one, man. Tell me about the movie and just give me some backstory on this.
Well, I've always been a big horror movie guy. I always loved Halloween, and the original Friday the 13th are my two favorite movies besides Xanadu. And, you know, gotta love Olivia Newton-John on roller skates. What can I say?
That was what was going to come out of my mouth right there.
But so I wanted to pay homage to those films, and I was fortunate enough at one of the conventions I did to be a booth down from Victor Miller, who wrote Friday the 13th. So I started picking his brain. I was like, hey, Victor, I got this film. I'd like to, you know, send you the synopsis for it, the script, see what you think. Well, here he liked it, and he's like, you know, he was one of the supporters of the film, and he loved, you know, he had, you know, talked to all the people for me and all that kind of stuff. He did a little promo for the film. So I wanted to pay homage to the 80s horror, but I wanted to do it in a wrestling-esque way. We had this epic fight scene in front of a big bonfire, and the Jeb Tucker character, who was the killer in the film, was played by Samu Anoa'i. So I got Sam involved with that. And Offa Jr. was his stunt double, that spot where we did the fight on top of the van and I threw him down onto the car. That was Offa Jr. taking the bumps. Oh. So, yeah, it was pretty awesome. And I co-wrote it, co-produced it, starred in it, fight coordinated and stunt coordinated. So I did a lot of things on that film. I'm very proud of that. We won the Best Horror Film Feature Award at the Philadelphia Film Festival that year. So, yeah, I'm very proud of that. But I wanted to make it kind of like a horror-esque tribute with wrestling, you know, because it's, you know, that's what I'm known for, wrestling. Yeah. And I think, you know, I think I'm not saying it because it's my film, but I think we could put that up to any other film considering our budget that we had and the story that we told. I think we knocked it out of the park, man. I think, you know, I'm very proud of that film, but I spent a lot of time and effort making a lot of phone calls, calling in a lot of favors, and you know, it was quite an undertaking. I'm so glad that I did it. But speaking of timing, like with Mark, we freaking had the film come out in October of 19. Yeah. And then in March of 20, the whole freaking world shut down. Yeah. They're working on a Southeast Asia deal. They're working on a European deal. I mean, it was on that Redbox, it was on Prime. Like, we already had it in all the American streaming services. Right. And then that happened. And I'm like, oh. So that was like, you know, 9 years of my life pretty much down the toilet because of stupid COVID. But, you know, timing, like we just said, yeah. Timing is everything. It just killed the momentum of the film. But I'm super proud of it. It's still on Amazon Prime. You can still see it. I suggest you do if you're a horror movie person. Yes. I wanted to build the tension. I didn't want to have somebody like chopped into a million pieces right off the bat. I wanted to build the story, build the characters, have a character arc, you know, have the whole nine yards with the tension build up and blah, 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 like Halloween and Friday the 13th. You know, you never saw people getting chopped up into a million pieces, but the tension leading to the kill was always like, oh no, don't open the door, you dummy. You know, it's like that yeah. kind of thing. You know?
Well, it's a great name. I love the name of the film, and horror movies definitely are perfect for guys of your size and my size. We can pull off being a killer. We can do that, you know. And, congrats on it, man. Anybody that's out there listening to this right now, whether you're on your way to work or you're doing an afternoon drive, when you get home tonight, check out 100 Acres of Hell. Starring the man on the screen right now, Gene Snitsky.
And even if it's 1 o'clock in the morning where Tom's at, make sure you watch it.
That's right. Before you go to bed.
That's it. Go out of your way. No matter where you are right now, pull over, load up your Amazon Prime and check it out. 100 Acres of Hell. And while you're at it, load up Axeman 2 as well and give Brian a look.
Yes, of course. Yes.
We know that horror movies and professional wrestling tie hand in hand. It's got such a cult following for both brands, both demographics, both genres. But while we're talking about movies right now that are underrated, in my own opinion, through watching clips of both Axeman 2 and 100 Acres of Hell, I want to talk to you about underrated stars from the Ruthless Aggression era. And we posed out a question to you before we went live on air. If we could get Snitsky's top five underrated Ruthless Aggression era stars, who do you reckon?
Well, I put a lot of time and effort into this. And I was trying to really like think to myself, who had been there, who they could have did so much more with, you know. And the very first person I thought of was me. I could have been so much more than what they gave me and what I did. I always felt like I had so much more to offer. And so I'm putting myself first on that list. But
number one.
A second guy that I thought was awesome that could really – do any character was Aaron Stevens. Him and I trained together at OVW. They kind of dropped the ball with him too, and he was just awesome, man. He could do any character, any type of anything, and he was a good wrestler. He was one of those guys that I don't care what anybody says. ever in the history of wrestling. I don't care what anybody says. You watch that back and you listen to the crowd reaction, and nothing's ever come close to that, I don't think. That's just my opinion. And I'm taking it to the grave. We have the number one Royal Rumble machine. So, Paul, love you, buddy. I always thought they could do so much more with him. And ironically, his tag team partner, you know, Brian Kendrick. Those guys, man, at the time, they were smaller guys, but they could make us bigger guys look like $1 million. And they always did. I always had great matches with Brian, Paul. You know, those guys. It's just, you know, whenever I had a night, I knew I was working those guys. It was pretty much a night off, man. Those guys were so easy to work with. So, like, just great guys. Just, you know, great guys to be on the road with, great guys to wrestle with. Just, you know, as we say in the business, a good brother. You know, he was just those guys were good brothers, man. And then probably the fifth one would probably be like Jamie Noble. Jamie was always, him and I had such great matches and great chemistry, and it never really did anything with it. Like, it was the good, you know, big guy trying to catch the little guy scenario, and he'd pop me with a few things, but then I'd cut him right off and shut him down and get some good heat, and he'd have some really good hope spots and blah, blah, blah. Like, we did so much cool shit, and it never got to really – nobody got to see it because it was all on house shows, you know? But I think Jamie, they could have done so much more with him and I and him, you know, as well. So they're probably my five guys that popped into my head when I was thinking about it.
That is an awesome list, right? By God, Jamie Noble. So we got Jamie, we got Brian Kendrick, we got Paul London, Aaron Stevens, and the man himself. You see him right there on the screen. Check out those dimples behind the beard. We love it. Yes, Snitsky in number one. Yes, we will bring the gavel down on those five. Beautiful. You are guilty as charged. And speaking of guilty as charged,
we're going to circle back to something that you mentioned at the beginning of the show, Gene. Now, this is all in fun, so just there's no fighting this. There's no kicking out, okay? So just listen up. This is a short version of Wrestler's Court. It is a clearly open and shut case, okay? Tom, as I'm explaining this ruling, please go ahead and roll these clips, and we will insert these at the appropriate time. So Exhibit A is my original version as the creator of the Meltdown, right here, the guy who invented it. And we go to Exhibit B of the Meltdown used by Mr. Snitsky. So therefore, you have been found guilty of gimmick infringement. Using the Meltdown without proper authority, you cannot appeal this decision. Just send all your future royalties money to this channel in care of Tom and Brian. We love you, baby.
Love you guys. It was an honor to steal your move, because I think I did it pretty damn good too. So
you did. You did. As a matter of fact, I watched you hit Val Venus with two of them. Devastating.
I got to say, it was hard getting Glenn's big ass up for that thing, though, man.
I got Haku Ming up in it. Oh, so geez. I know what you mean about a big man, a guy that's 320, neighborhood. I know what you're saying.
Reaching that arm around back through, man. Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Sir.
I feel so inferior right now. I've not melted down anybody. But what I want to do ask you is, both of you, seeing as we've just taken a nice little lighthearted trip to Wrestler's Court, did either of you ever experience a true Wrestler's Court where The Undertaker sat in the justice chair?
No, not me.
No, Brian?
No, almost in Europe one time, but I was able to take a powder, so I was okay.
He's still here to tell the tales. I love that. Yeah. I love that. Excellent. Well, I like that. That was awesome. So we played the little game before of the top five underrated. Now, one of our main features here on The Meltdown is we like to go to task with our guests. And I've got something fun to play with the legendary Gene Skitsky. So it is awesome that you're taking a drink right now, because we might catch you short of breath, because we're going to play a game that we call Winner Stays On. I'm going to give you two names, and you just have to give me your preference between the two. One will stay on and one will get shelved. And then we'll go to the next name. Are you ready to play? Mr. Snitsky, are you ready to play?
I was born ready.
Yeah. Well, let's see who gets binned in this game of Winner Stays On. And this particular game, we are going to play with monsters as our gimmick. So, Winner Stays On monsters. We're going to start off with Big Van Vader and Mike Awesome. Who stays, who goes? Vader or Awesome?
Vader.
Vader stays?
Yeah.
Awesome has been awesome bombed out of the ring. Vader or Viscera?
Viscera.
Vader got a Vader bomb. We're sticking with Big Nelson. Viscera or Bam Bam Bigelow?
Damn, that's a tough one. I'm going to go with Viscera because I used to travel with him. And I know, Nelson. I know Nelson very well when he was alive, and he's a great guy. So I'm going to stick with Big
Daddy B.
Yep.
Yeah, he's had so many different names, it's hard to...
We'll go for that. Channeling my inner Star Trek as well, I'm Vader. Okay, yes. Viscera stays on. Viscera or Matt Morgan?
Viscera.
Viscera or the great Kali?
Viscera.
I love how we got a chuckle. Viscera still on. Viscera or Mark Henry?
I love Mark, but I got to stick with Viz. Big Viz.
World's Strongest Man has just been World's Strongest Slammed. Viscera or Mike Knox?
Viscera.
We're keeping going. Viscera or Test?
Viscera.
This could be like an Otto Vance from last week's Alex
Wright. Yeah.
Yep. Viscera is keeping strong. Viscera or Tyson Tomko, your old tag partner?
Got to stick with my buddy, Big Viz. Sorry, Tomko.
Viscera or Umaga?
Oh, that's a tough one. Damn.
We never make it easy here, Gene.
I see that. I mean, I love my Samoan family, but I got to go with Vis again, buddy. I got to stick with him.
This could be a clean sweep for Vis.
Oh, wow.
Viscera or Batista?
Definitely Viscera.
Oh, okay. There was a definitely in there. We are a positive show, so let's hold that back. Viscera or Psycho Sid?
I was always a big Psycho Sid mark as a kid, man. That's a tough one. Damn.
Here we go. We're handing it out to you, Viscera Sid.
Yeah.
Well, I got to go with Sid on this one because I have him on my big guy list.
Okay.
The world's largest love machine.
Sorry, Viz. Rest in peace, buddy. I love you.
Psycho Sid or Heigenreich?
Sid.
That was quick as well. Psycho Sid or JBL?
I love John, man. That's tough. I'm going to stick with Sid, though. Sorry, John. I love you, buddy.
Two more.
All hell.
Oh, hell. Psycho Sid or Kane?
Oh, Kane. I got to go with Glenn. Sorry. If it wasn't for Kane, I wouldn't have done all the stuff I did because he could have easily kiboshed that.
Well, let's give you the last name. Kane or Snitsky?
Snitsky.
Yes, brother. Yes. There we go. He's all going right. Over.
Love Flex it.
Those guns. Look at those boobs wobble. Yes. There we go. Welcome.
Hey, I love Mr. Snitsky. What can I say?
You got it, brother. You got to do it.
I love that. You know what, Brian? In the three times that we played this game, two of the talent have put themselves over.
Hey, you know the old saying, if you don't put yourself over, who is? So put yourself over.
Great. Exactly.
Job. Great job.
I'm definitely my biggest fan. My wife will tell you that.
There you go.
Oh, you're amazing.
Love it.
So, yes, Snitsky is going straight over. Sorry, I had to catch my breath right there.
Yeah.
It's okay. It was a little bit of an awkward pause, but that's okay.
That's okay.
Nothing happens. It was a tape delay.
Yeah, that's all it was.
Across the pond. Tom, are we going to do our four of the Mount Rushmore?
That's how we're gonna wrap everything up in a nice big bow. Honestly, okay. just a little breath.
Sure. That was a hell of a job right there. I mean, back and forth. I thought Viscera was just about to go all the way, but as Tom always does, he puts that nugget in right at the end, which is, of course, yourself. So how are you not going to put yourself over?
Exactly. Yeah.
Mm. We'll have to send this tape over to Alex Wright and teach him. Take it on, Alex. We love you.
We love you, man.
Okay, right. So we're gonna post to you your Mount Rushmore of big men. So let's find out if any that I just laid out in our monsters quiz fall into your Mount Rushmore of big men. Now I'm gonna pose this first to Gene and then to Brian. We're gonna find
how many guys do I get to pick? Four, right?
Four. Big four. Yep.
Well, obviously I gotta go with Glenn Kane because he was my first major storyline, and like I said, I wouldn't have had the opportunity to do things I did without him giving me the stamp of approval. So he's definitely one. Taker's number two. And then I don't want to be like a brown nose or kiss ass kind of guy, but Brian is actually one of my all time favorite guys as well. So I got to throw him on there. And then even though, you know, some people love him, some people hate him, but I got to go with Nash just because Nash was like, you know, back when I was in high school, we used to goof around about Big Sexy and all that kind of shit. So got to go with my big brother, Kev. So they're my four guys.
That is a strong.
Wow. Lineup, yeah.
And look at Brian's face.
I didn't know what to say, man. I appreciate that. Thank you, man.
No, when I was doing my gear, I actually wanted to get my gear just like his. I like that singlet he wore. And he was jacked, so, you know, showed off the physique really good. And I just, like I said, I had the Pope Handle Slam as my finish. And I just always enjoyed his tag team work with Crush, man. They were my favorite tag team back in the day.
Love it, man. Thank you, man. And it happened at a perfect time because the first ever Chronic action figures were released today.
Nice.
What timing? Yes.
You're welcome.
Thank you. All right, listen, I'm going to hit you with my four. Tom, are you ready?
Always ready, brother. Born ready. Let's go for it.
All right. Now,
you're going to be tough to beat that Gene.
Oh, it is. I went really old school. Just because there's so many great big men. And we look at guys that are 6'4", 275 and above. And then there's a lot of guys that are 6'6", 6'7", 6'8", 6'9", 7-footers, you know. Mm-hmm. So I just sort of went through the catalog and just sort of looked at some of the big time names of the past. I could easily put in a lot of current guys in there, a few at least current guys, but I went with, and in no particular order, Bruiser Brody.
Nice.
Ernie the Cat Ladd. Undertaker. And this was almost a tie for here. I went with Big Van Vader, number four.
Yes.
But again, Andre could have slipped in there easily just because the history and the amount of time these guys were on top. So I was just sort of trying to look at all aspects. Of course, Kane could easily slide right in there also. So
yeah, I had a couple other names as well, but the four that I chose were the first four. But I had Vader in my grouping of names as well, and Sid,
yep,
and also Bam Bam, because I mean, Beast from the East, man, Jersey boy, that shit he did for his size was he was like groundbreaking, you know.
Oh yeah, yes, and you know there are some current stars today. Big Bronson Reed's another guy who's absolutely crushing it. And so impressed with his work, and I know he has a bright future ahead of him.
Speaking of Crush in it, he was on my list as well. Crush, I was like I had his hairdo. We all had the mullet back in the day with the, you know, that's just how the whole offensive line in Missouri. We all had that same mullet. My wife just shakes her head. She's like, "How did you guys ever
those Mizzou guys, man? Those Mizzou Tigers,
yeah, brother."
Oh, well, epic. I mean, I think I need to bring that style back. I think it will. There's the ring. There it is. Oh, check it out. Check it. Oh, we've got it.
I love it.
Pull it back just a little bit more, Gene, and then I can focus right in. Oh, bling, bling. Ching, ching.
It's yeah, like, buddy.
Yeah, it doesn't get much better than that. That's incredible. And speaking of incredible, those joint Mount Rushmores that you both just put out to us were next level. What we want to know from all our wonderful fans of the Meltdown is let us know exactly who you would have on your Mount Rushmore of big men. So we're looking.
Here you go, Brian. This is just for you, buddy. My wife made me the shadow box, my Mizzou jersey, and the game ball. I scored out. I had the highest score of all the offensive linemen from Missouri that year.
So impressive, man. I love that. Go Tigers. Good job.
My beautiful wife made it for me. Say hi, honey.
Awesome.
Hello.
Hello. Hello, world. It's so
she hates when, she hates when I do that. And then my boy Hondo is sleeping over here. He's so excited.
Oh, there's Hondo. Yeah. Love it.
Hondo has been waiting for this episode of the Meltdown that he got so excited he turned off. And Batman's just there, just chilling. Just rocking it. The Camp Crystal Lake. There is the Dark Knight himself. We're in the Batcave. We're getting a full-on scoop right now, ladies and gentlemen, as we are going in depth into Snitsky's pad. And yeah, wow, man, that's awesome.
I'm a bit of a superhero guy. I got a lot of cool Batman stuff, and Batman himself, he's my doorman. So
love it.
Yeah, can you imagine? You break into a random house, and just as you turn the corner, there is a life-size Batman. And
that's right. That's right before they get shot.
That's exactly what I was just going to say. Just as they recompose themselves and turn around, Snitsky's there with a shotgun. My goodness me. Well, what a... There is no fun.
I'm not lying. Oh, I'm not lying. It's right here.
Oh, well, there's no finer spot to wrap it up in a beautiful big bow. It's been an absolute pleasure you spending your Tuesday evening and my Wednesday morning and everybody's Meltdown Monday with us here on the Meltdown. Gene, thank you so much. Look at those guns flexing. Oh, they're the real ones that need to be worried about. Yes, you know it. Brian.
Let's see her bicep. She's shy. My wife's even more jacked than I am, so I'm trying to get her to flex for you, but she won't.
Oh, you're a star. Brian, I'll bat it over to you.
All right. Hey, Gene, I want to say thank you, man. We really appreciate you being an amazing guest today on The Meltdown, taking the time out of your busy schedule, because I know how busy you are. And again, we appreciate you stopping by. And just so you know, you and your wife are always welcome to come out west and visit a bygone era in Tucson, Arizona, maybe some horseback riding. You're always welcome, my friend.
Dude, I'm so jealous of your videos when you post those. I'm like, said to my wife, I'm like, man, look at Brian out here riding his horse around. Jesus, I got to get out there. We got to get out there. Thank you for that invite, man. I love you, bro. I've always been a huge fan. Like I said, you know, thanks for having me on. It's quite an honor. I'm, you know, I can't say enough good things about you, man. Thanks for having me on, Tom. I just got to know you too. So you seem like an all right guy. And, you know, Maybe in the future we can hang out sometime, but for right now, thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
Absolute pleasure. Ladies and gentlemen, put your hands together for the man, the myth, the legend, the beast. And it's not his fault. Gene Snitsky! Woo! What a conversation with a ruthless aggression era icon. Gene Snitsky, thank you so much for being with us, whether it was punting babies or putting weird things on his teeth or smashing it in the world of horror movies. What a true icon. It was a pleasure to have him with us. And how heartwarming for my big brother over the pond there to be a featured name on Snitsky's Mount Rushmore. Brian, you've got to be loving that, right?
I had no idea, man. Honored is all I can say. Honored. Very honored. G is such a great guy. We had been
social media friends. We actually didn't get to meet until WrestleCon, WrestleMania this year in Vegas. Well, and he's just as advertised, a great guy. And just, I'm so glad that we had him on the show tonight.
It was awesome. It was truly awesome. And from reconvening and meeting up at conventions, that's exactly how we like to meet you guys, our wonderful viewers and listeners here at The Meltdown. But we give you the opportunity to interact with us each and every week by dropping a little message into our Meltdown mailbag. And we've chosen two from this week's questions from our viewers to pose to the Creation of Devastation and the Tomcat of Manchester. So I'm going to pose this one over to Brian. Let's see exactly what you've got to offer from this. This is a really current question, and it comes from Neil Barrowman from Newcastle, England, just up the road. Neil, thank you very much for your question. It's a very, very current. Brian, what are your thoughts on the recent WWE releases of R-Truth and Carlito?
Wow, this is a hot topic in social media the last, I don't know, 4 or 5 days since it happened. It's tough, man, because R-Truth is just loved by so many. So he will be missed as far as on-air talent. But you look at the positives of it. He had such an amazing career. What a long run throughout WWE, then another big stretch in TNA. So he's been busy for a long time, and who knows, this may not be the end for him. There's still other options out there. Carlito, a little bit of the same thing, but he can also go back and continue being the superstar that he is in Puerto Rico. So I still think there are sunny days ahead for both of those guys.
As one door closes, many others open. So we are sending all our support out, as we do, to our Meltdown brethren, to R-Truth and Carlito. And personally, I think the WWE might have just missed a trick in the past Saturday night's main event. If they had Ron earmarked for termination just a couple of days prior, wouldn't you have put him in a loser leaves town match and given Cena all that heat as well? That's quite an interesting question to pose to our wonderful listeners. So yeah, that might have been something that I would have done, but hindsight is 2020, and sometimes you don't want to shine a work on a shoot. So but thank you so much anyway, Neil, for a wonderful question. Our second comes not from the UK and not from America. It comes from Canada. Shona from Vancouver, British Columbia in Canada. If you could have any guest from pro wrestler, from any pro wrestling era, to be a guest on the Meltdown, who would it be?
Wow. Wow. Great question. Thank you, Vancouver, British Columbia. We love Vancouver, by the way. And all our Canadian friends and fans, coast to coast, we love you guys. Love for the input on the mailbag here. Now, that question, I would have to go back to probably my mentor and a man who helped me so much in this business, Mr. Wonderful Paul Orndorff. That's who, if I could go and roll back the hands of time and pick one person, I think he would be, because he's so damn entertaining. There are a few names that did pop into my head, but he's top of that list.
And I think that we need to invite his son over for a very special guest spot at a particular time. Yeah. We would love to hear some Mr. Wonderful stories down the line. But if you were posing that question to me, Shona, being a massive mark for this particular superstar throughout my childhood and broaching more and more and more past his untimely passing in 2003, I would love to have had Mr. Perfect, Kurt Hennig, being a guest right here with us on The Meltdown. It would have been a true privilege to find out how the head ribber truly needles all the big men around the world. Mr. Perfect, Kurt Hennig, was a true icon in the ring, a true superstar out of it, whether it was on the mic, actually in between the ropes, backstage. He shone in everything that he did. Kurt Hennig, you would have been my guest. So, yes, there we go, guys. There we go. Brian.
And one other thought I was thinking here as I see his photos all over my office here. I'm thinking, you know,
I could have had Brian on here, but I would have been laughing so hard that we would have never gotten anything done.
Yeah,
so,
absolutely.
So just to put that out there.
Brian's always on our show. Brian is there. He's got your back each and every week. There he is. And for those of you that are following the WCW channels and WWE vaults on YouTube that the WWE put out, yes, we are still watching those as we did in our infancy here on the Meltdown. You guys can check out Super Brawl Revenge from 2001 that appeared only just a few days ago. And there is an awesome chronic segment of match that I'm not even going to, I'm not going to tell you any more about, but go out of your way this week to watch and find out exactly what goes on in the latter days of WCW. You won't want to miss it. And there's a lot more that you won't want to miss this week. Brian, tell the peeps exactly what you're up to this weekend.
Yeah, Tom, we've got a big week. I mean, starting today, tonight, tomorrow, depending on where you are in this world, a big week ahead of us in New York City and New Jersey, as I will be flying coast to coast, heading back east. I will be doing a signing at Pandora's Box in Lafayette Township this Saturday from 12 to 3 p.m. I want to thank my agent, Mr. Nick Christie of Think Signatures, for putting this together, and also the man at Pandora's Box, Mr. Eric Miller, for setting this entire event up. It's going to be great, and we were looking forward to all the fans coming out and stopping by for a visit. And who knows? Some of those fans might just be right here on the Meltdown.
Absolutely. If you are going out to Pandora's in New Jersey this weekend to meet up with Brian, we want to see all your pictures, guys. Get your pictures in with Brian. Make sure you take those selfies and get those autographs in. We want to see exactly what you walked away with that the big man has signed for you and exactly what kind of pose. And make sure that you subscribe to the Meltdown. Well, I think it might just be time, just before we wrap things up for another wonderful week and episode 9, to just give you guys a little sneak peek on what is coming on big episode 10. Well, we visited the Ruthless Aggression era this week with Gene Snitsky, and we are keeping the trend coming as we are going to hit you with one of the biggest names from the Ruthless Aggression era. I feel like a microphone needs to come down in front of my face. From Green Bay, Wisconsin, ladies and gentlemen, we will have the pleasure of welcoming Mr. Kennedy. Kennedy. To the airwaves next Monday. It is going to be a sight to behold. We're going to hit him with some beautiful, hard-hitting questions while keeping all the positivity in our hearts. It's what we like to do here on The Meltdown. So, as we get prepared to rule a gorgeous line under episode 9, Brian, I'm going to hit it over to you. From me, the Tomcat, here in Manchester, England. Thanks for being with us.
We appreciate you, everyone, joining us coast to coast around the world. You guys are joining us each and every week. We are growing each and every week, each and every day. We love the support. You guys have been amazing. We truly, truly appreciate it. Again, episode 10 coming up with Mr. Anderson, Mr. Kennedy. He's fresh off of a huge interview with Chris Van Vliet. We're going to just ride that coattail and have some more. And if you actually take a deep dive, maybe into, I'm going to be watching on my flight from Tucson to the East Coast. I'm probably going to be watching Behind Enemy Lines, starring Mr. Anderson. I'm looking forward to that. So, once again, guys, thanks so much. We will see you here next week, where we are kicking in the doors, as always, breaking necks and cashing checks. Much love from Arizona.